From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of December, 2021. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, we'll update you on yesterday's release of the U.S. EPA Renewable Fuel Standard RVOs. Those are the volumes that are required to be blended into the nation's gasoline and diesel supply. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, will join us to talk about the RVOs and the impact they'll have on agriculture in the past and in the future as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $5.87 and a quarter. That was up 1 1/4 cents. $5.89 was the settlement price in the May, a half higher. And December of next year, down a quarter at $5.54 3/4 for the new crop. January soybeans, $12.61 a bushel, up 10 3/4. The March up 10.5 at $12.68 3/4. And November soybeans, $12.44, 12 1/4 higher. The bean meal up $7.50 at $3.57.20. The bean oil, $55.55. Down $1.55. Wheat futures March soft red up 14, rather down 14 at 7.94.5, and the hard red down 15.5 at $8.12. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead at $138.67.5. That's down 55 cents. Feeder cattle at $163.40, $1.62.5 lower, and lean hogs at $76.05, down 50 cents for the day. Crude oil futures at $72.64 a barrel, up 59 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 0.4 cents higher per gallon at $2.26.6, and the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.15 2 tenths, about 5 2/10 cents lower. Natural gas at 382.5 is up 0.119. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 33,659, down 54 points for the day. Jackie Vakes from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, hi, Todd. It's great to be back.
It is good to have you back. It's been a couple of weeks. Have support and resistance levels changed much?
They actually haven't changed very much. I was surprised, although we know that these are monthly numbers, Todd. So for corn, March still has support at 572, resistance 634, May 525, 656, and July 582 and 646. And when you look at a chart, the May corn definitely looks to be the most positive at this point in time. On beans, January 1234 and 1328, March 1172 and 1290. May 1174 and 1289. December gold still trading, 1760 support, 1880 resistance. Dow Jones, 31473 support, 36614 is resistance. Dollar 94.5 and resistance at 96.13. And that is the only one that's really changed since I left, because 96.13 was support when I left. So the dollar has weakened a little bit. December Bitcoin, 47215 support, 59545 resistance. And it's interesting when we move into managed money, Todd, because when I left, managed money was short soy meal. They are now long everything. So on soft red wheat, they're 29,000 long, just like last week. They're long 329,000 on corn compared to 333 last week. Long 41,000 beans, compared to 40,000 last week, long 37,000 soy meal compared to 26 last week, and long 71,000 soy oil compared to 72,000 last week. Now, as we move on, we get into export inspections. Wheat exports are running 13% behind compared to a year ago. They were 14% behind last week, and we need to average 15.7 to reach the USDA numbers. Corn, 16% behind compared to 18 last week, and we need to average 52.2 million bushels to reach USDA. And soybeans, 21% behind compared to 24, and the average has actually gone down from 30.8. It's down to 28.8 right now. And so we're seeing some improvements in those areas.
I do have a quick question as it's related to the holidays. I guess the Bulls had Thanksgiving. Is it likely that the Bull is going to have Christmas too, given the longs in the marketplace from the fund managers?
Well, I tell you what, you know, that's a really great question, because, and it's also a very difficult thing to predict, because, you know, we have position changing that starts to go on. But I do think there's a good possibility that the Bulls could have it if the weather continues to be the way it is in South America. And so I think, you know, we've got strong crush margins. Ethanol came out today, reported a 5-week high production level. That's also very supportive. We just sold another 1,844,000 metric tons of corn to Mexico this morning. China bought 130,000 metric tons of beans. You look at that, all of that is very, very supportive in South American weather. Now, from a negative standpoint, if there'd be anything that would have an impact, and yet I don't think it would have enough to keep the bull down, is Evergrande in China, Russia and the Ukraine. And of course, you know, something we have to all focus on as we move forward here and move into the new year is inflation and, you know, what the higher dollar could potentially do to us. So we've talked about this so many times. You know, as long as other countries that want to buy our goods see their, you know, an improvement in their currency, then we're still okay. But the thing that's concerning me right now is crude oil. And, you know, if crude oil, we thought it was really going to crash for a bit there. It's just been pretty steady in that 70, 72 area. It did crash, came back last week. Crude is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world. Well, if crude continues to go up and the dollar appreciates, that costs them more for energy and leaves less dollars to buy goods. And so those are things that we just have to really think about as we move forward.
Brazil and Argentina, usually you have a couple of things from those two nations we ought to discuss.
Well, I do. And one of the things I looked at this morning was the October agricultural exports by country of destination. I think this is important for people to hear. Mexico is up 53.2% on corn imports this year, Colombia up 80.3%. And actually, when you look at total metric tons, Mexico has almost made up 100% for what China hasn't bought, because China's down 74.6%. And so on soybeans, China continues to be the leader, but they're down about 12.5%. But Mexico is up 2.7% this year. Japan is up 73.9%. They've become much more aggressive on buying soybeans. Same way with Egypt. And when it comes to wheat, Mexico up 48.8% on wheat this year. Colombia up 377.4%. So that tells you that's a pretty small number, but still a big bump. You know, and so I think it's important that we recognize the value of our neighbor to the south, because they are number one exporter right now, or importer right now, in corn and wheat, and number two in soybeans. Then we move from there and we look at what's going on in China at the moment. Pantheon Macroeconomics put out a thing yesterday that China cut the amount of reserves that most of the banks need to hold, which is a way of getting the banks to lower financing rates for these struggling companies that they have there. But, you know, this is a pretty troubling sign. It's anything but routine for China, but it's very normal for a central bank to do if there's a sudden surge in financial risk. And so, you know, this definitely, I like how he said this, this move puts the lie to the central bank's assurances that property financing would be unaffected by Evergrande's implosion. And it's certainly looking like it's going to be a default on the part of Evergrande. Now, some news came out today. Evergrande, the government's getting more involved, which doesn't surprise me. They've created a committee to restructure the company. And we now know the company has over $300 billion in debt. And they're speculating there's perhaps a lot more of that off of the books that hasn't been reported. So the fallout from Evergrande is not over. And so I would expect that, you know, we're going to continue to see that come up in the news, and that'll impact our markets. There's no question about it, because it brings into question the GDP for China. And, you know, a lot of their GDP was based on all this heavy house building and everything else that was going on. So pretty interesting. Down in Brazil, they decided to keep B10 biodiesel blend for 22. And so The producers are a whole lot more than upset. There's no question about that. They're complaining, you know, that they're just complaining bitterly. They were promised by law. And of course, we know what government promises can be like. So they said a note from the Ministry of Mines and Energy indicated they were taking this action to protect the interests of the consumer concerning prices and the quality of the biodiesel. The quality of the biodiesel, I think, is a catch there, because petroleum producers and distributors have been against this, of course, because they contend it's going to be harder to maintain the quality of the fuel and it reduces their market share. I just had a laugh. Yeah, we have no self-interest here at all. We're only concerned about that. So we know who gives more to the politicians than the biodiesel producers do. But the biodiesel producers have invested heavily because the blend is supposed to go to B15 in 2023. They're now contending, you know, of course, that this decision is going to have devastating consequences to the industry. And it's true. I mean, they invested with the idea that this was going to go forward. So it's really, really sad. In Argentina, of course, the December weather is looking pretty worrisome. You know, the weather so far has been good for the growing season and good enough to get normal early crop development. But now as we move into December, we're looking at a more typical La Nina pattern. And that's making them very nervous. Last week, they called for hotter than normal and drier than normal conditions, at least through mid-December. And a meteorologist for the Brazil National Weather Service indicated last week that when a La Nina is present, the main production areas of Argentina have only a 25% chance of above normal rainfall in December. And he indicated there's only about a 10% chance of above normal yields in Argentina during a La Nina. So, you know, a lot of this is impacting the market. The thing we must remember is Argentina is expanding their acres. So even with a lower yield, they may still come in with a fairly decent crop. So the areas of concern in South America, drier conditions in southern Brazil, drier forecasts, especially for Rio Grande do Sul. The La Nina seems to be very much in place for Argentina and southern Brazil, and much of the early planted corn is going to be pollinating and filling during this December-January timeframe. So, and we also have a slower than average corn planting pace in Argentina. So there's plenty of fodder there to be able to trade as we head into the new year.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate all the work today.
Thank you. You have a great one. Take care.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. Well, US EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, issued its 2020, 2021, and 2022 renewable volume obligations, otherwise known as RVOs, under the Renewable Fuel Standard, the RFS. As released, the new standard raises volumes moving forward. However, EPA also retroactively lowered the already finalized 2020 volumes. University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin says that retroactive change is a big blow to biofuels used in the nation's gasoline and diesel engines.
People are underestimating how big the damage was from the approach that the EPA took to 2020 and 21. It was in the billions of gallons of lost mandate that would have had to been filled somewhere by biofuels, whether it's ethanol or biodiesel. So seems like most of the ag and biofuel groups are willing to live with that, but it was not for sure an unmitigated win.
Here are short versions of the reactions from some ag and biofuels organizations. The Renewable Fuels Association, the RFA, called the announcement a, quote, modest step in the right direction, unquote. The NFU, the National Farmers Union, wrote, quote, we are encouraged that the EPA is taking biofuels policy in a much more promising direction. And Growth Energy said the proposal was, quote, a mixed bag. In CGA, the National Corn Growers Association was more direct, saying it strongly urges EPA to move forward with finalizing the strong 2022 volumes while correcting course on the proposed retroactive cuts. And ASA, the American Soybean Association, was appreciative that EPA had released its decision, but would have liked to have seen higher retroactive numbers for 2020 and 2021. ASA also made note the 2023 RVOs were due with a release, but haven't yet been announced. For his part, Illinois Scott Irwin made note the announcement has little impact on ethanol demand. This is because the economics of ethanol haven't been blended into the nation's gasoline supply at a rate of about 10% per gallon.
The real swing factor was for FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel. So just another kick in the pants for the FAME biodiesel industry, which is already being kicked around by renewable diesel.
Irwin says had EPA not made the retroactive adjustments, there could have been billions of gallons of additional FAME biodiesel, what's normally called soy diesel, and renewable diesel requirements for the 2020 and 2021 calendar years. This would have been the case, says the ag economist, if EPA had made decisions consistent with the renewable fuel standard statutes. We'll turn our attention now to the weather forecast as usual for a Wednesday. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. It looks like a beautiful day in the middle of the country today.
Well, not bad in the middle of the country, but I want you to start on the West Coast and work your way across the country. What kind of weather conditions are people working with?
Yeah, you know, we've got a succession of storms slated to move into California, and that is great news for some of those folks out there dealing with this multi-year drought. We expect to see the first wave of energy to move through the region rather briefly here tomorrow, and then a short-term break, and then a more aggressive storm system will come along as we move from the end of the weekend into the first half of next week, and there'll be some substantial snows in the mountains. The Sierra Nevada will probably see a couple of feet of snow accumulation, if not 3 feet. So that'll be really helpful for them as far as runoff potential in the spring to help their irrigation systems. We will see a follow-up disturbance come in probably a day or two after that, maybe during mid-week next week. That will produce a little bit of additional light precipitation, and then that'll probably be the extent of their storminess. But they'll take whatever they can get, and it looks like the volume of moisture for the valleys out there will be good enough to moisten up the soil for a little while, but they do still have a big need for additional moisture. Now, as that storm system comes inland, in fact, the two of them that I've mentioned, both of them will attempt to move across the Rocky Mountains and bring some snow to the ski resorts, which will be nice for those of you who are planning on going out there for the holidays. But more importantly, it's going to bring some opportunity for moisture in the form of snow and rain into part of the Great Plains. Now, the first storm system that comes from California is probably going to fall apart as it runs into the Rocky Mountains, but we might be able to get a little bit of moisture to fall on the other side. It's not going to be very significant, but a small part of hard red winter wheat country might get a little bit of moisture from that, mostly Nebraska, northeast Colorado, but I wouldn't be holding my breath on that particular event. After the big storm comes into California for late in the weekend, early next week, if that one has a little better potential to bring some moisture to some of the hard red winter wheat areas that have been dealing with some dryness, it's not likely to hold together very well in the area that needs it most, and that's the High Plains region from the Texas Panhandle to eastern Colorado and southwestern parts of Nebraska. I talked to a producer in the Texas Panhandle a couple of days ago, and he told me that his wheat crop, which had been planted and got established sort of okay, is now dead. It actually has not rained there, and they've had so much heat the crop withered and died. That's an unirrigated production area, obviously. But that was kind of interesting to talk with him. Well, this storm system may produce a little bit of very light precipitation in the Texas Panhandle, but it's not going to be enough to break down the drought. Now, more likely, this system coming out of California will bring some significant snow and rain to the upper portions of the Midwest and the Northern Plains. This will occur during midweek next week. We may get another little blizzard on our hands up that way for the Dakotas and parts of western Minnesota, so we'll be watching for that. But it doesn't look all that great for hard red winter wheat country. And I'd like to point out, too, while we're in the U.S., I think there's going to be a pooling of cold air in the western part of Canada, in the northwestern U.S., after the storminess ends in California. And that cold air may try to move into the middle of the country in the week of Christmas and or the immediate following weeks. We'll be watching for that.
In Southern Hemisphere, what do you see out of Australia and South America?
You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Australia having too much rain and a quality decline in wheat, barley, and canola areas in the eastern part of the country. You know, it was a pretty sad situation there for a while. Well, that has come to an end. And their weather has turned around, and it's much better now. Of course, some of the damage is done, and you can't reverse that. But I think there was a small enough region that was impacted by this quality issue that now that the weather's improved, the rest of the country is still looking fairly good. So it's probably only going to be a small part of their overall crop, New South Wales primarily. And the weather does look to be fairly good now for harvesting over this next week to 10 days in Australia. And then, of course, South America, I think the big interest there continues to be over La Nina's influence on southern Brazil and eastern Argentina, as well as Paraguay and Uruguay. All those areas tend to have less than normal precipitation when La Nina's in control, as it is now. And indeed, their rains have been less than normal over the past 60 days, actually. But you wouldn't know it when you look at soil moisture because their temperatures have been normal to slightly cooler than normal, and there has been some regular occurrence of rainfall across some of these areas. So the crop has really not been hurt much at all by the below-average precipitation in either eastern Argentina or southern Brazil. Now, that could easily change as we go forward through these next 10 days to 2 weeks. The potential is fairly good that we'll see a ridge of high pressure building up in Argentina at some point over the next 10 days, and that'll add a little heat and further suppress the rainfall, and I think Argentina may end up with a little more stress to deal with on their hands. In the case of Brazil, though, it's really just Rio Grande do Sul, the far southernmost state, that may have a problem with dryness like Argentina. Right now, today, we do have dryness and moisture stress occurring farther to the north, up into Paraná and portions of neighboring Paraguay. It's very dry in those areas. The topsoil moisture has been depleted. Subsoil moisture is marginal. So they are stressing at the moment. But there will be rain in those areas beginning on Sunday night into Monday of next week and lasting off and on through the week. So they will get some timely relief there. So it's really only Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, that's going to have an ongoing drier tendency, and the same is true for parts of Argentina. So we'll watch all those areas. But as of this moment in time, we haven't lost much of anything as far as potential production, especially not on the Brazil side of the fence.
Hey, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.